Welcome to the Fantasy Blackboard, your home for all of your fantasy football rankings, tips, and discussion. Class is in session. Here are your hosts, Jonathan and Zach.
Welcome back to the Fantasy Football Blackboard.
What's going on, guys?
That's John. I'm Zach. And we are going to dive into, as we always do, injury news from week six.
The worst news right off the bat. So we're going into a bi-pocalypse here. And people are already hurting at running back, but this just makes it worse because the Panthers, Bengals, Cowboys, Texans, Jets, and Titans are all on bye in week six. So Derrick Henry, Breece Hall, Damian Pierce, Tony Pollard, Mixon, the Miles Sanders, Chuba Hubbard, kind of split backfield, all of them on bye.
Yeah, he got in the end zone this week.
He did. So all those guys are on bye, and then, of course, we had some more injuries, so we'll dive right into that.
Biggest one, I think, there's so much, I know I'm building this up right here, but there's so much mystery surrounding it, is Christian McCaffrey and his oblique injury.
Yeah.
Had his MRI, and nobody knows the results yet.
Yeah, I mean, he tried to get back in the game, which I thought was encouraging. He wasn't in so much agony that he couldn't at least try to play. Now, of course, they didn't allow him to get back into the game, and Jordan Mason kind of took over in that one. But I've listened to some, not just fantasy analysts, but some doctors, sports doctors, talk about his injury, and I guess the data shows that it's usually like a 1 to 2 week thing, but you can't rule out the idea that he might play.
More of a pain tolerance type.
Yeah, so obviously we'll be talking about Jordan Mason and Mitchell later in the show on the waiver wire segment, but it's something you just got to really keep a close eye on it because you know McCaffrey wants to be out there. It's just like kind of an ambiguous situation. We'll just have to monitor it as it goes and see what happens.
Kyren Williams, after having a great second half in the Rams game on Sunday, twisted an ankle, sprained an ankle. It's not a high ankle sprain. We'll probably miss week seven against the Steelers, but shouldn't be much longer than that.
Yeah, again, we're going to be gunning for some guys on the waivers this week who are more than likely very short-term answers at the running back position, so yep. It's going to be part of the conversation of, like, you know, what do you want to do with Fab? How much are you actually willing to invest in all these different names? Because Zach Evans is the main guy, you know, who's going to likely be the leader in the backfield against Pittsburgh, with Ronnie Rivers also out, and he's set to miss several weeks.
Yep.
So, another backfield. We'll dive into it more so at the end of the show, but it's going to be really interesting. I mean, you got teams all around fantasy. You're just hungry for running back production at this point. And CMC was one of the few staples right now in fantasy football. And Kyren Williams was one of the other few. And so it's just all up in the air right now. It's a total mess. I'm grimacing.
Hurt for the second time this season, sorry, David Montgomery has a rib injury. And according to Dan Campbell and his very literate response, he'll miss a little bit.
He'll miss some time. Yeah, again, sweet. Jahmyr Gibbs didn't play last week, so you'd love to assume that he goes right out there and takes a full workload.
Well, he also didn't
practice
at all last week, so we've got to watch practice on Jahmyr Gibbs.
But we already have one data point we can refer to when it comes to Jahmyr Gibbs playing when Montgomery is out. And even in that matchup earlier in the year, he only had a 55% snap percentage. So I don't think you can assume he just goes straight into a work. Horse rule, even with Montgomery out. I don't think he is, you know.
Probably be Craig Reynolds.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he just naturally inherits the goal line work either. I think Craig Reynolds will be another guy we can talk about. And, running back is just a mess right now.
That is it for the major running back injuries. Justin Fields dislocated his thumb on his throwing hand.
Yeah.
So we'll probably miss week seven if he needs surgery. It'll be more than that.
Yeah, if it's surgery, you can pretty much
count him out.
Almost
season,
consider
probably.
Dropping him. Yeah. I mean, it's to that point. It's a 6-plus week ordeal if he does go under the knife. So, we're entering week 7 already. Fantasy regular season ends week 14. So, if you have an IR spot, you can stash him, of course. But I'd quickly be pivoting and trying to figure out, you know, if there's another quarterback option, you can either acquire through a trade or find someone that you can stream for a little while off waivers, because this is a pretty open-ended. There's a broad range of outcomes right now with Fields, and that also really impacts DJ Moore.
Yep.
Could boost up running back production on the team if they decide to lean on that a little bit more, and if Fields isn't, you know, stealing as much of the goal line work on the ground, things like that. But yeah, not a good look for Fields owners.
Another quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, has a minor sprain in his knee. This is going to be a tough one because the Jaguars play Thursday night.
Thursday night game. Thursday night strikes again. Probably be another ugly game.
Yep.
I
mean, honestly, if he wasn't hurt and there weren't other injuries, I don't, like, with Zay Jones and other Jaguars players, I don't know if that actually would be a terrible game.
Maybe not. It's just pretty Thursday night consistently fails us.
I know. We talked about it last week, and I agree with you. But with the Saints' defense and the way the Jaguars have been coming on the last 2 weeks, would be an interesting matchup.
Definitely interesting, but probably another just muck fest. You know what I mean? Yeah, where it's just like 20-17. And thing is, with all these guys out on bye and everything else going on, the Fields injury, I mean, even if he hobbles out there and plays, he's still probably a top 12 QB start for fantasy, which is ugly, but you kind of have to start him.
Debo Samuel, AC joint sprain. We've said this for a number of players throughout the season. So, as we know, there are, like we talked about last week, three levels to this. His x-rays are negative as far as like a full tear, so he's going to avoid surgery. Probably be out about 2 weeks.
Yeah. And then if you move on, I think Debo Samuel, just real quickly, there's a chance. I mean, it's a pain tolerance thing to some extent.
Oh, definitely.
He's the type of guy to play through this type of thing. I don't think it's completely impossible he plays this week. It's more than likely a one-week miss that he probably has, but you know, you still have Brandon Ayuk there. This just raises him a little bit higher. George Kittle raises him a little bit higher. They're going to be pretty determined, I think, to go out there and be highly efficient and make a statement after a big upset loss to Cleveland. So, but then there's more quarterback issues.
There's more quarterbacks: Jimmy G, Ryan Tannehill, and Baker Mayfield. Jimmy Garoppolo has a back, and apparently there's a lot more mystery involved in this one. But don't expect him to be playing week 7. You have Ryan Tannehill with a high ankle sprain. This one's interesting because Malik Willis looked terrible.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, so I have Tannehill as my third QB in a dynasty league. It's a super flex league. I don't think you can touch anybody on that offense right now, not named Derrick Henry. But I mean,
right.
Malik looks awful. Of course, they have Will Levis.
Give him a shot.
Sitting there. I mean, I just think it's a situation where, you know, Malik could come in, and if he just bombs it in the first half, you might see Will Levis immediately in the second half.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any type of, like, he does not have a long leash, Malik Willis being. So, God, I mean, this could be the end of the Tennessee team as we've known it. I mean, every year they seem to just kind of hang around, and they're better than people think they should be, and they win games that you don't expect them to win, but it just looks really bad there right now. Doesn't look good.
Baker Mayfield has a contusion in his non-throwing left hand.
Should be a non-factor.
Yeah, just something to monitor.
He'll be all right.
Won't miss any time. Couple players potentially returning from injury this week. We feel like I've been saying this every week. Aaron Jones.
It's up in the air. I mean,
he could play. Same with Jeff Wilson. Finally returning for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Deontay Johnson, after getting hurt in week 1, potentially Pat Freiermuth, Jamal Williams, Jameer Gibbs, and the mystery surrounding Deshaun Watson and why he
hasn't been playing. If Deshaun Watson's cleared to play again and just decides he doesn't want to, I'm telling you what, I'm just going to I'm gonna be livid because I have a couple shares of him, and it's just he could have really helped me in week 6 when he decided not to play, and I say that because that's what happened. He's making the decision not to play even though he's been medically cleared.
Mm-hmm.
So, weird situation in Cleveland. Obviously, they win that game without him, which is just adds to the weirdness of it all in Cleveland, but Deshaun Watson has to put up or shut up here at a certain point. I mean, he has to win someone over. He's doing the opposite. I don't feel like he's in the good graces of anybody in the league or even in Cleveland now after this.
A lot of reports out about rookie quarterback Anthony Richardson being done for the season.
This is killing me, too.
Yeah, it's a tough
one. Everyone we've talked about so far in this segment has been just specifically players I own across the board.
That's unfortunate.
I mean, it's just,
Yeah, Anthony Richardson is going to be getting surgery on his shoulder. Should probably put him out for the rest of the season. It's unfortunate too, because if you actually look at it, Anthony Richardson actually finished one game.
That's a shame.
It's kind of one of those things where everybody talks about it all the time when there's a new mobile quarterback coming out of college, and you're like, oh, be careful with all those hits you're taking.
Yeah, well,
it caught him to Anthony Richardson. Shoulder.
And the thing is, he was throwing the ball better, I think, than anyone anticipated. Right out of the gate, he wasn't doing bad. I mean, we know the rushing upside. He's a tank running the football, but he was competently throwing the ball to
those
receivers. Points
per drop back, Anthony Richardson was the QB1.
I mean, in fantasy. It's just so frustrating. Another guy I have, I handcuffed Lamar with him and was thrilled about, in a redraft format in a 1QB league, having the dynamic of being able to utilize one of those guys as a trade piece, you know what I mean, and get mm-hmm. better at a certain... Because I also have Devon Achane, who's now on IR, and I've had Barkley, who missed time, you know, so I was like, okay, I can flip this guy as he continues to ball out, but it doesn't look like we're going to be able to see it.
That's going to do it for the injury portion. While we're still looking back on last week, we're going to take a look at a couple games that were interesting in week 6. We're going to start with the Dolphins and Panthers. The Dolphins doubling up the Panthers 42-21, however, had to come back from a 14-point deficit early on, so pretty...
Yeah.
Even though it ended up being a blowout, I thought it was a pretty interesting game, and I think it shows a lot of the fortitude for the Miami Dolphins team there, because the Panthers came out looking pretty good.
They did. I thought it was Bryce Young's best performance of his young career, and it's not saying a lot, but he didn't throw any interceptions, threw a touchdown, almost 40 attempts, over 200 yards, so there was something there. Adam Thielen just continues to...
That was going to be my big point.
I mean, it's...
Adam Thielen is crushing
it. He's just a bona fide wide receiver one, the way that team's operating right now. And Chuba Hubbard had a great game with Miles Sanders out.
Yes.
So,
88 yards in the ground with a touchdown. Adam Thielen had 11 receptions on 13 targets for 115 and a touchdown.
Right. Then on the Miami side, I mean, Mostert... Whoever the starting running back is in that offense right now just seems to be just a lock as an RB1, yep. regardless of who it is. I think that's why Jeff Wilson is so interesting and why we're watching him so closely, because once he's involved, I think he's almost guaranteed some really quality touches. I think Jalen Waddle continues to just play the clear Robin to Tyreek Hill's Batman.
But really, it's almost like a 1A, 1B, because, I mean, Tyreek Hill had 10 targets and Jalen Waddle had 9.
It's
so.
Just quality of targets.
Yes,
Tyreek
sure.
Hill averaged, no, this is not a typo, over 27 yards per reception in this game with a touchdown. Jalen Waddle averaged 7 yards per catch, 7.3 per yep. catch. So they're not obviously being utilized in this. the gravity of their receptions and their targets, not quite the same thing. Tyreek Hill is just, I mean, he might catch 2,000 yards this year. We talked about
so
it
I'm saying
the
that's
year,
what
it,
that's what his goal was.
It's just unreal.
We talked about that in, I think, week 2 about how that was his goal for the season, and he's well on
it's
his way.
It could happen. I mean,
another 163 yards this week.
The big thing too is Tua is healthy, and he looks the best he's ever looked. It looks super comfortable in that Mike McDaniel offense.
Yep.
So I mean, as long as he's on the field, Mike White did promptly come onto the field, throw one pick, and it was or one
what
pass,
he does,
and
man.
It was a pick six.
What he does.
But the game was way out of hand at that point. But basically start Tyreek Hill. That's a news break.
We're going to talk about another one here, and I'm sorry to say, but the Lions beat up on the Buccaneers 20-6, and your boy Mike Evans didn't look too hot.
He didn't. No, the Lions are the real deal. It's about time we start talking about them that way. 5-1 this year.
Yep.
They're just fundamentally sound, and Jared Goff is continuing to play better than anyone wants to give him credit for. You know, they lose Montgomery in this game. Craig Reynolds comes in. He's completely inefficient, but it just doesn't seem to matter. They won the game through the air today. Amon-Ra St. Brown with a massive day. 12 catches, 125 yards, finds the end zone. He had 15 targets in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Laporta, probably his best target share of the season.
Bro,
this was actually
was
one of his down games.
He was dropping everything, though. It was making me I was so frustrated. He just couldn't hold on to the ball. He could have had a huge day on 11 targets.
Yeah. But only 4 for 36 yards
from
Laporta.
Jameson Williams gets in the end zone on 3 targets, 2 receptions, 53 yards. It almost looked like he caught it by accident. I'm not going to lie. It looked like when I saw it happen, I'm like, he was just staring at the sky and fell down and it landed on him. That's what
it
looked like.
Pretty much. I mean, he only got 3 targets in this game.
Yeah.
So that's just, he still doesn't feel like a guy that is startable for me. I mean, no, yeah, you get a touchdown, it saves your week, but you got to see more before you put him in the lineup.
We look on the other side, Baker Mayfield, not great, 206 yards and a pick. Rashad White, not great. Chris Godwin leading all receivers with 6 receptions and 77 yards. Mike Evans, 4 for 49.
He's been steady. Godwin's been steady all year. Yeah. We knew he was a great receiver. It's just not, there's not a lot of upside there. Mike Evans did have 10 targets in the game, 4 for 49. And he didn't kill you.
No, it's not terrible, but it's not what you
want. But a wide receiver, you get these weeks sometimes. You know, anyone not named Tyreek Hill or Cooper Kupp or Justin Jefferson, basically, you guys are going to have those weeks. So
Stephon,
of course, you know. So,
yeah, just thought it was an interesting game. Really expected more out of the Buccaneers, especially at home. But I think it just goes to show how dominant the Lions can be. Let's go into the Jets and Eagles. I think the biggest upset of the week.
Ooh, I don't know. Is it?
I mean, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple in contention here, but yeah, this was a huge one. Jalen Hurts looked awful to me in this football
game. Jalen Hurts, 3 picks.
He gave the game away.
He did.
AJ Brown was having a great day against a good defense. I thought you were thrilled with that if you're an AJ Brown owner.
Yeah, 9 targets, 7 receptions for 131 yards. Devontae Smith had 11 targets.
Yeah.
He was killing me, dude, because I've got a lot of Devontae Smith and only 5 for 44. Like, okay, same as Mike Evans. Not terrible. It doesn't kill you, but when you're seeing 11 targets and you're not even catching half of those, that's where it starts to hurt a little bit.
The thing that stands out for me, though, was DeAndre Swift and the pass game involvement. Having 10 targets, 8 catches, just 40 yards, but who cares?
Found the end zone.
He found the end zone, and I mean, they were stifled on the ground. No one could run the ball.
Yeah, I mean, Jets front is outstanding. Jalen Hurts led the team in rushing with 47 yards.
Yeah, DeAndre Swift only 18 yards on 10 carries.
His worst game running the ball of the season.
But was the clear guy. I mean, right. Kenny Gainwell and Boston Scott combined for 4 carries. Didn't do much with them. Really encouraging if you're a DeAndre Swift owner, because he went, I mean, what was he, like a 7th, 8th round pick in a lot of leagues this year.
Right.
He's been great and continues to be. And the big question was, you know, can he catch the ball? Will they dump the ball off? Will Jalen Hurts utilize the running backs through the air? They're doing it with him. Mm-hmm. And so really encouraging on that side of the ball. But then on the New York side.
Great game for Breece Hall. Not super efficient rushing, 12 for 39 yards. However,
Finds the end zone.
And then 5 receptions, caught all 5 of his targets for 54 yards.
Yeah, I mean, really useful. I mean, it's clearly his backfield now. We talked about it last week, but Dalvin Cook is just not it.
No.
He's a pure handcuff at this point, completely unstartable. He only is in lineups if, you know, for some reason Breece Hall goes down again, which hopefully he doesn't. But Garrett Wilson, really encouraging the way that Zach Wilson has kind of grown up a little bit as a QB these past few weeks, and it's really helping the Garrett Wilson trajectory, because I think we were all pretty down on it when Rodgers got hurt week one. So 12 targets again in this game, 8 for 90. Didn't find the end zone, but that's still a really nice day without a touchdown. So Garrett Wilson's still like a bona fide wide receiver too, I think, moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's look at one more game from last week, and let's look at last night's Cowboys and Chargers.
Yeah, I thought this was going to be a shootout. I really did. The way the game started, they both got on the board with touchdowns real quickly. Herbert's been so efficient this year, mistake-free.
I heard somebody say today, and I really agree with it, if you watched the game last night, that Herbert looked like he was just gripping the ball too hard and just throwing it too hard for people to handle out of frustration.
I agree. I think he was unsettled because of what that Dallas Cowboy front can do defensively. Pressure, I mean, they only had 1 sack in the game, but man, they disrupted a lot of pass protection and really, I think, sped up his clock a little bit when it came to, you know, him going through his progressions and being able to get the ball out accurately. I don't know if I've ever seen him that inaccurate.
No, it was out of character for him.
Yeah, it was out of character, but you got to give a lot of credit to that Cowboy D. I mean, they got embarrassed last week against San Francisco, and they came out and they played a really good game.
On the Chargers side, Keenan Allen leading the way with 11 targets, 7 receptions, 85 yards, and a touchdown. Austin Eckler, 14 attempts, 27 yards rushing, but you can also throw in 4 receptions for 35 yards on 6 targets.
Saves the day a little bit because, you know, wasn't very good on the ground. They couldn't do anything on the ground.
No. Josh Palmer comes in the second leading receiver, 4 for 60 on 7 targets. Quentin Johnston
barely
only
sees the
two
field.
Targets and
barely on
nothing.
The field.
Yeah,
it's
super
start to,
disappointing.
It's start to it, or it's time to start really like sounding the alarm with Quentin Johnston.
Yeah.
I'm smelling a little Breshad Perriman, a little maybe a little bit of N'Keal Harry going on. Dare I say a little Jalen Reagor. I mean, this is not a good sign.
No.
6 weeks into the year, no Mike Williams on the field anymore. He's gone.
Right.
There's no. They need someone to go out. I mean, Josh Palmer's fine, but they need their first round pick receiver to be involved, and they're just not even giving him the opportunity. I mean, there were red flags to his tape and him as a prospect. A lot of people said maybe he wasn't the finished product yet at the position. There were things he needed to get better at, but. Man, for them to still not be utilizing him. I mean, I know JSN's off to a slow start a little bit as a rookie, you know, mm-hmm. and you can put some other names in there, but he's still been involved. He still
JSN
something.
Still has two guys ahead of him, technically.
Exactly, and he right. still has done, while not a lot, a lot more
what
than
Quentin
Johnson.
What you would think is that Johnson would be competing with Palmer for those touches and all that production.
Yeah, it's just history is not on his side right now with how his career has begun. And he's still a rookie. I mean, things can happen, but... really bad start. I think it's a big red flag for him.
On the Cowboys side, Dak Prescott, 272 yards and a touchdown, also got a rushing touchdown. He led the team in rushing with 40 yards. Most of that was on one run.
That was a great fake, by the way.
Yeah. No,
outstanding.
Yeah.
Fooled everyone. Fooled me. Fooled the cameraman. it was a really good play.
Tony Pollard, pretty inefficient on the ground, only averaging 2 yards, 15 carries for 30 yards. However... turned 7 targets into 6 receptions for 80 yards.
It saved his day, but I'm very willing to say that Tony Pollard does not look the same as he did last year.
No.
I don't know if he's not fully recovered yet from that leg. I know there was some stuff
it's that
going
or maybe
on there,
he's just not cut out to be a lead back and out there all the time.
But the burst, the explosiveness that he's always had.
Right, he's like the change of pace
there.
Guy, though.
It's just not there, though. But if that's not there either, I mean, we didn't know how the goal line was going to work out in Dallas, but... Mm-hmm. It's not great. Tony Pollard, he's still a fringe RB1 just because the position's so bad right now in fantasy football.
Correct.
But he's not delivering the upside and the explosiveness, just the eye test alone. He's just not passing it the way that he has in the past. Now, that maybe in the second half of the year, he continues to find his stride. They're going to be on a bye, so hopefully he continues to rest up, get better, and find his footing. But Tony Pollard's a little bit of a disappointment right now.
For sure. CeeDee Lamb. Pretty big game, though. Caught all 7 of his targets for 117 yards. Outside of him and Tony Pollard, Brandon Cooks caught all 4 of his targets for 36 yards and a touchdown. Michael Gallup saw 10 targets, but only 3 catches.
Yeah. Again, if you like trends when it comes to a receiving room, I think everyone perceived the Dallas Cowboy offense as whoever their true wide receiver two is, whoever the guy that Dak trusts will have fantasy value. I think at this point you can clearly put Brandon Cooks ahead of Michael Gallup on that pecking order.
Mm-hmm.
Albeit he wasn't targeted as much, but Michael Gallup had every chance in the world in this game. 10 targets, only caught 3 of them. Brandon Cooks maximized everything he had. He also had a nice rush out of the backfield for 14 yards. He still looks fast. He hasn't missed a step.
Oh, no, 100%. I mean, like we said like before the season, Brandon Cooks, I mean, I think we mentioned it. I mean, he is a... I doubt he'll get there this season, just the way it's going so far. But, I mean, year in and year out, he's a 1,000-yard receiver. Quietly, though.
Very quietly, but that's okay. I mean, he's a sneaky little waiver ad if you you're in a shallower league and he might be available. He made a great catch in the end zone, too. So, thought he looked really good for the opportunity that he had, which wasn't a lot, but he maximized on it. Gallup, complete opposite.
Right.
All the opportunities, and he just looks slow. He looks like he maybe doesn't trust himself. I think we got to put the Michael Gallup thing to sleep. I really do.
All right. I said that was going to be the last game, but I kind of got the feeling you wanted to talk about this one when I mentioned biggest upset. So let's go to the Browns and 49ers. Browns winners in that one, 19-17 over the previously undefeated 49ers.
This is the biggest upset to me because I had the 49ers as the clear-cut best team in the NFC entering week 6 over Philadelphia. I think just the way they've done things has been so much more... just efficient, and they're just a lot more convincing with the product they've been putting on the field. Philadelphia's won games, obviously. They were undefeated entering the week, but it's been by the skin of their teeth multiple times.
Totally.
They don't feel like they're operating at peak, you know, at that peak level. And the Browns didn't have their quarterback. It was P.J. Walker.
They didn't even have their real backup quarterback. They went with not that he played well at all. P.J. Walker, 192 yards and two picks.
Right. But they won the game.
But the Browns were able to run the ball pretty dang well. If you look across the board here, Jerome Ford, 17 attempts for 84.
Kareem Hunt,
12 for 47. Marquise Goodwin ripped off a 20-yarder. P.J. Walker, he tried to run three times.
He did. It's just Brock Purdy looked awful in this game.
It was Brock Purdy's worst game of his career, much less this season.
Easily, and it's not even close. I mean, that was a bad game.
He was inaccurate. I mean, completed less than 50% of his passes for only 125 yards.
Well, this is what happens. You're under the microscope when you've had the beginning, you know, the start to your career that he has had.
Oh, for sure.
And there's a lot of talk about, is he a system quarterback? Is this something more, you know? And a lot of people bring up that CMC went down with injury, and so did Debo. My counter to that is that they still had Brandon Ayuk, who's one of the best route runners in the NFL on the field. They still had a quality replacement in Jordan Mason in the backfield. They still had George Kittle all over the middle of the field, and they still had Shanahan calling the plays. They got debunked this week. I mean, they just got it's, you know, still going to be a great team moving forward. I think you saw what it looks like, though, when things don't go as planned for that offense. Brock Purdy doesn't have like the arm strength to just will you to a first down on a tight window. Like,
I mean,
he's not an improviser, so to speak.
In his defense, he had a bad game, but he did get them in position to win that game.
Absolutely, and they missed two field goals in the game. But to even be playing that closely to a P.J. Walker-led offense...
Oh, totally.
No one saw it coming. So, to me, that's the big upset. Brandon Ayuk still saw 10 targets, only caught four of them for 76 yards. Did have a big catch. But outside of that, everything was disappointing. No George Kittle. He had one catch for a yard. I mean, he was... That's the part that I couldn't understand, is you got to utilize the middle of the field with your dynamic tight end. They weren't able to do it. And... maybe this Browns defense truly is elite. I mean, at this point, you have to give them credit. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
They're doing it to everybody.
That's what I was interested in this matchup going into the week, to see how, probably playing the best defense they've played so far, how the 49ers would react to that.
And you keep saying that, and like, in hindsight, yes, I agree.
They did have
some injuries. They played the Steelers in week one, which was supposed to be an elite offense. They played the Cowboys, who I still like that unit... I think, like, head-to-head from a talent perspective, more than the Cleveland Browns, and they embarrassed them. So there's something going on there with that Schwartz defense and schematically. I mean, they are really throwing teams for fits. There's not a single offense that has found success against them yet.
Right.
So, I mean, I think you just have to pay close attention to that and also their defense special teams matchup in Week 7 on the waivers, if they're available. Because, I mean, they're just a slam-dunk start right now, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's going to do it for our looking back section, as we look back on the week that was with the games from week 6 as well as injuries. We're now going to move on to our waiver wire targets for the week going into week 7. We started the show off with a bunch of injuries. Obviously, there's a ton of running backs just out for the count. So let's take a look at who's available going into week 7 if you need to pick somebody up. I'm going to start with I'm going to toss three names out there that I think that are going to be highly targeted. Zach Evans for the Rams, whether it's a one-game thing or not, with Kyren Williams. Jordan Mason, just because of the production we saw him outproduce Elijah Mitchell.
I think that's the interesting one to me.
And then Craig Reynolds with Detroit. Because Montgomery's going to miss this week.
Yeah.
If Jahmyr Gibbs isn't able to practice, it's going to be Craig Reynolds' backfield.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, even injuries aside in those respective backfields, you already have a bunch of running backs not in play because of byes this week. So,
correct.
Tons of fantasy managers are going to be going to the waiver wire, whether it be traditional waivers where it's just the waiver order or fab bidding. I think that's probably the biggest conversation. We'll be talking about the fab. Aspect of it all. I mean, for me right now, you look at San Francisco, I get that Jordan Mason is going to maybe be a priority for a lot of people, but I don't think, if you try to definitively tell me that you know what's going to happen in that backfield in week 7, assuming CMC doesn't play.
I don't know.
Because he may still play. It's not completely ruled out. You're lying to me, because Elijah Mitchell is there too. Yeah, Shanahan already came out and said...
Now, I will say, to put it in perspective, he was coming off of an injury.
He had one practice late in the week.
Right.
And Shanahan already said it publicly that, listen, we felt more comfortable with where Mason was. He has shown something, to this point. And Mason's been good when he's been on the field. That dates back to last season. But they love Elijah Mitchell. And Shanahan said some pretty, bright words about Elijah Mitchell and what that looks like. I mean, he really didn't. I just feel like it's probably a committee situation if McCaffrey's out. It's a little bit of a toss-up, but I would not be shocked if Mitchell just goes right back into being the guy in Week 7 and getting the majority of touches. So I think a lot of people are on Mason as the main guy, and I don't think you can assume that at all. I think it's kind of a flip of the coin a little bit.
Okay.
What do you think? I mean, tell me what you think.
No, I mean, I don't know. I really don't.
Exactly.
I really don't know. I mean, if you're a Christian McCaffrey owner and you're looking for either one of those guys, you're going to have an easier time picking up Mason. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. You're going to have an easier time picking up Mason. I mean, he's only owned in like 2% of leagues.
Yeah, he's available everywhere. Elijah Mitchell still, though, only owned in 27% of leagues.
Right.
So.
I mean, it's like you were just saying, it's really a toss-up. It's really hard. I'm not going to be able to call it. I don't know.
You have to be able to ask yourself a question, because if you're making a fab bid, a blind bid on one of these players, number one, you don't know for sure that either of them are the one, because McCaffrey can still play. But number two,
right,
based on what a lot of reports have been and what doctors have said, if McCaffrey misses time, it's probably only about a game. So even if you do land one of the two, you probably only get a one week of starting out of them, and you need to land the right one.
Yeah.
And there's no real clarity with that either. So I get it. Everyone's going to throw a lot of money around. There's a lot of desperate teams who need running back help. And it's the 49ers backfield. In no way am I trying to discourage people from wanting to bid on these guys. It's just that you have to temper expectation a little bit and understand that, listen, I wouldn't be putting 50% bids on these guys who you only need for a week, but you don't know which one it's going to be. And you don't even know if they're going to be the guy,
right,
because McCaffrey,
right,
there's so many variables to this. So just temper expectation a little bit and don't
keep your bids low.
Don't kill yourself.
Need.
You know, if someone's willing to bid 70% fab on one of these guys because they're convicted on it and they have this gut feeling it's going to be the guy they're going for, let them do it. But that probably hurts them later in the season because, I mean, there's going to be a lot of other waiver wire episodes. We're going to be talking about a lot of other guys who can help
talking
the team
about it every week.
So, exactly. So it's just...
I did want to talk about one wide receiver who has just, in the past week or two, met our criteria for availability, being under 35% owned, and that's Rashid Shaheed. Hot start to the season in weeks 1 and 2, and then really cooled off, but then had a pretty big week last week.
I mean, he's as boom or bust as you could possibly imagine in a player. He's a deep threat. He is really good. And if he finds the end zone on a 40-yard bomb, you feel great. He'll probably only get 3 other targets that game.
Sure.
But
I think I do like him this week against Jacksonville on Thursday night.
Yeah. I mean,
think about Jacksonville. They were in London for 2 weeks. They come back.
Sure.
Yeah, they played a great game, but Trevor Lawrence is hurt. Not that he's on the defensive side, but they've just had a lot going on to throw in a Thursday night game on them, and I can see
tough.
It being kind of a...
Whoever made their schedule, I'd be mad if I was a Jaguar fan.
So, I don't know. Well, if we're just going off sleeper leagues, he's only owned in 28% of leagues and has the upside to be, pretty good wide receiver week in and week out.
I think another guy is Josh Downs right now in Indianapolis.
Yes.
That slot
utilization. I missed picking him up last week, and, I'm just too good, and I don't have the waiver priority in a non-fab league, unfortunately.
Yeah, right. Another name I really like is Wandell Robinson.
Yep.
He's someone I actually rostered early in one of our deeper leagues and caught all 8 of his targets against Buffalo on primetime. It's not like a huge upside selection, but really what you have with him is a guy that they drafted him a year ago. He looks healthy. And on a team that's really all short to intermediate passing right now, He's the only guy that feels viable as a start in PPR leagues because he can give you a floor as a flex. And he's only, according to Fantasy Pros right now, only rostered in 11.6% of leagues, which is really low. So he's a guy I would definitely keep an eye on, really more so for like a PPR format. I don't like it nearly as much in half PPR.
Has an appealing matchup against the Commanders coming in this week.
Sure, he sure does. And I thought Tyrod Taylor did an admirable job of filling in. I thought he was okay. Better than
Daniel Jones has looked. I mean, yeah. It's not hard to do that.
It's not, but there was enough
there. But he's still
there,
just
you know?
It's unfortunately, he still just looked like Tyrod Taylor, and there's a reason he's been basically a career backup.
Oh, absolutely. But it didn't hurt Wandell Robinson's value. It actually was his best target share of the season to this point. So specifically for that conversation, when it comes to Robinson, I like it.
We will dip into the tight end position here for a second, talk about somebody real quick, and that's Gerald Everett. Hasn't had a great season so far, but had a pretty productive game Monday night against the Cowboys, where he saw 5 targets, caught 3 of those for 16, did find the end zone.
Yeah.
Second highest targets of the week. He's just available, and like we, you know, same as running back, tight end is, it's bleak out there.
Oh, it's very bleak. He found the end zone. The problem with that is it's a toss-up. Is it going to Donald Parham or is it going to Gerald Everett?
Parham saw Parham, a lot of targets, too.
Parham gets a lot of red zone looks. So I actually prefer Parham, I think, if I have to stream a Chargers tight end right now. But the guy I want to talk about is Taysom Hill.
I saw you pulling that up.
Yeah. I mean, his first real game where he was actually utilized as a pass catcher.
Yes,
at tight end. They've moved him into the slot a bit as well. He had 8 targets, caught 7 of them, just 49 yards, but added a rush to that for a couple more yards. He was a tight end 12 this week. I mean, you have to follow the volume. Now, it's hard to – that's such an interesting situation with him. He's such a weird player.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's something you have to keep an eye on because you know they like using him as like that Swiss Army knife type player.
Yeah, but I think especially now with Carr at quarterback.
Excuse me, tight end 6 on the week.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah, yeah. I didn't want to correct you too much. But yeah, tight end 6. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's tight end 6. So.
But I think now with Carr at quarterback and not, you know, whoever they've had the past couple of years, Jameson, I almost said Jameson Williams.
At tight end, Juwan.
No, I'm talking about a quarterback.
Oh, a quarterback. Oh. That's just been a hodgepodge of nothingness for years. Yeah. It was Dalton last year.
Yeah, so yeah. Basically what I'm getting at is they're not going to be taking throws away from Derek Carr this year to let Taysom Hill get back there and do some weird, I guess you call it a wildcat type whatever.
Yeah, I mean, but they it could, was, but I mean, yeah.
But it was cool slash interesting to see him actually play the tight end position
and
do pretty
agree.
Well.
Yeah.
I mean, he's an athlete.
He's a great athlete. I mean, he's been such an enigma, I think, his whole career. Because he can do so many different things, but he's never really had a full-time role at right. anything like for an extended amount of time.
Oh, let's see how they use him this Thursday night.
Absolutely. My last guy at tight end who I continue to really like is Luke Musgrave.
Yeah.
He had 7 targets last week in week 5. They had a bye week in week 6, but in week 5 against Vegas. We've seen him hit the 7-8 target mark a couple different times already.
Well, he led the team in receptions that week. Also.
He did. He was a tight end 15. Again, it wasn't a lot of upside, but there have been a couple opportunities to hit him for bigger plays. I just feel like there's something brewing there. Denver's awful against tight ends.
Yeah.
So I love Luke Musgrave as a streamer. If you're really desperate, I'm probably taking him over everyone we've talked about so far.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like it. Moving on from waiver wires, we're going to do a similar thing that we did last week now that we're splitting these episodes again. And we're going to take a look ahead. John, I am going to call out a couple games here, and I want to hear who you think is going to be fantasy relevant or irrelevant in these matchups.
Okay.
And then we'll have a little discussion about it.
All right.
We've talked a lot about the Thursday game, so we'll let that one rest a little bit, Jaguars and Saints, because we both hate Thursday night.
Yeah.
However, I think an interesting matchup is the 5-1 Lions and the 4-2 Ravens.
Yeah, so we'll start on the Detroit side of the ball. I'm not starting Jameson Williams yet.
No.
I refuse to do so.
You can't not start Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Yeah.
Or Jared Goff, honestly.
We know who they are at this point. Amon-Ra is a wide receiver one. You're always starting Amon-Ra St. Brown. Laporta, you're smash starting. But I'd like to dive more a little bit maybe into the guys who people are trying to have a hard time with. So Reynolds at running back. I think if you get him off waivers, you have to start him.
Right.
And I've thought a lot long and hard about this one, but what we saw from Jahmyr Gibbs in the previous game when Montgomery was out did not encourage me, or in other words, it didn't really convey to me that they have any type of true willingness to give him goal line work yet.
No.
And the fact that he's also coming off an injury and didn't play in week six, I think Reynolds could end up getting some really valuable goal line touches and have double-digit touches in the game. So if you're desperate, he's another guy you put into that waiver wire conversation with Evans and Mason and Mitchell.
Now, what about on the Ravens side? Are you touching any of those running backs? Edwards, Hill.
Justice Hill had involved. Again, it's a complete split backfield.
Yep.
Detroit's been okay defensively, too. I mean, I just don't like it. I'm starting Reynolds over both of them right now, I think. If that makes sense, just for comparison's sake.
Yep.
So on the Ravens side, I mean, it's Lamar and Andrews. We know about those guys. You're always starting them if you drafted them. Zay Flowers is the only receiver I'm willing to take a chance on right now in the offense. I want no part of Bateman, who I think has looked lousy. And Odell looks washed. And I'm just not,
one decent catch and run in London over there.
Yeah.
Unless
you're just unbelievably desperate and you're in a really deep format and you have to start one of those guys, okay, maybe you catch lightning in a bottle, but I only like the usual suspects over there with Lamar and Andrews, and then Zay Flowers I think is a pretty healthy wide receiver three or flex start at this point.
Okay, moving on, we're going to talk about a big AFC West matchup. Chargers and Chiefs.
So on the Chargers side, I think you have to look at Josh Palmer. He's had consistent involvement, and he had a chance to have an even bigger game on Monday night than what he had. He ended up giving you about, I think, 4 for 60. So he gave you 10 PPR points, but there was opportunity for more, including potential red zone targets. And the fact that Quentin Johnston has not eroded into that offense, or emerged more, I should say.
He is eroding.
Yeah, he is eroding individually. it's just really... solidifies for me Josh Palmer as a true, like an actual quality flex start moving forward for that team. And other than that, I mean, Eckler had a down game, but he's a smash start no matter what. Do not panic on Austin Eckler. Don't touch Josh Kelly. Don't even consider it. Miserable. It's just, he's just an awful football player. he's just really bad. On the Kansas City side, I mean, Pacheco has a strong, he's the guy in that backfield.
He's starting to stack up some pretty good weeks in a row here.
Wide receiver-wise in Kansas City, man, it's not pretty. I love what Rashee Rice is doing on a limited sample size.
But it's hard to just feel confident starting any of
those
guys.
You can't feel confident about any receiver on that team. Travis Kelce at tight end. That's it.
That's literally it.
It is a committee-type situation. I'm not starting Tony until I see a lot more. I want nothing to do with Sky Moore, which hurts me because I liked the opportunity heading into the year.
I mean, you weren't the only one. Everybody was high on Sky Moore, and it's just been a disappointment. I think what's interesting about this game, non-fantasy-wise, but just football-wise, is Kansas City's inability to really score a lot of points this year against
with
a Chargers team.
With the exception of a bad Chicago team that was laboring.
Right. Against
in week three.
Playing the Chargers, who, like, I realize they only scored 17 points on Monday night, but a team that has the capability of putting up some numbers, especially with another week of Austin Eckler back.
Sure. But you bring up a great point. Likely the over-under on this is going to be higher than it should be.
Right.
That seems to be what follows the Chargers specifically. And right now, Kansas City, in every game they've played, the last five they've played, 19 points against Denver, not a good football team.
No.
27 against Minnesota, not a good defense. They grind one out with the help of the referees. They put up 23 against the Jets in New York. And they put up 17 against Jacksonville. I already mentioned the Chicago game where they put up 41, but that team was literally on fire when they matched up against them. And then week one, they get upset against Detroit. So I think you have to temper expectations with that whole team. If you're a Patrick Mahomes owner, you're not getting what you drafted them to be because you got them early second round probably. If you're one of those people, I feel bad for you, son, because, like, oh, man, it's rough. It's just he's delivering, like, QB5-8 production right now, and it's not at all what you drafted him to be. Kelsey's the only guy who probably moving forward can still give you what you assumed you would get, but you know, I think you keep a close eye on Rashee Rice in deep leagues. You can throw a dart with him. Other than that, it's a literal roll of the dice in that receiving room. So yeah. Kansas City's not as sexy as they've usually been.
No, not at all.
Yeah, it's just kind of just temper expectations. Seriously. I mean, just forget about it.
Sunday night has the potential to be a barn burner as we have the Dolphins and the Eagles.
I love this game. This is a fun one.
This will be a fun game.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
So, firmly believe that this could be a little closer than people realize and maybe a little bit more lower scoring than people realize because you have Philadelphia, if you look at it, more of a ball possession offense. They're not always, I mean, they have the ability to quick strike, but oftentimes you'll see a 12 to 14 play a drive.
I mean, look at the first drive of their game the other night.
Exactly. Where they kill a bunch of clock, they're going to utilize the run, they're going to be super balanced, they're going to use Hurts and a lot of option, read option opportunities. They're going to run the ball between the tackles. Miami not as stout defensively, obviously, up front as the Jets. So they're going to try to run the ball. They're kind of going to try to dictate and have possession.
I mean, I think that's the best way to play the Dolphins.
Absolutely. I mean, you want to keep them off the field because they are high-flying. However, the Eagles' defense is very, very good. So you want to keep an eye on injury status of some of those guys up front, specifically Jalen Carter. I believe he just missed the game in week six. He's a huge difference maker, early rookie, defensive rookie of the year candidate, I think. I mean, he's a game breaker.
Oh, definitely.
And if he's on the field, I mean, I think you have to temper expectation from that Miami backfield with Mostert for maybe the first time this year. No Devon Achane.
It's hard to say that with a guy that's literally scoring multiple touchdowns every week.
It is, but I just do not expect there to be nearly as much free space 100%. As what that offense has seen. This could be a game where they lock up Hill a little bit more. Maybe Waddle shows up more than he has to this point. So, I mean, the usual
maybe the homie Braxton Berrios.
Yeah, you never know. Maybe Chase Claypool makes an appearance. You know, no, forget I said that. Forget I said that. But I like DeAndre Swift a lot in this game. He's my favorite start on either side, just in terms of value. Obviously, you're smash starting Tyreek Hill and A.J. Brown, regardless.
Right.
You're starting Tua, you're starting Hurts, but DeAndre Swift is the really fun one for me.
Yeah,
I love how they used him in the air against the great front in New York, but he could be a lot more efficient and run the ball a lot better at running back this week against that Miami defense. So DeAndre Swift is my start of the week.
All right, let's wrap this up with one more.
All right.
Steelers and Rams.
Oh, God. Neither of these teams are below 500, which is just shocking to me.
It's shocking. Steelers coming off a bye. Rams coming off a great second half of a game. But
yeah, they were awful to start that football game.
They lose Kyron Williams in the process for at least this week.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to be as big of a deal. As it's being made out to be.
We're talking fantasy wise here, so.
Yeah, no, well, right. So, specifically,
Zach Evans.
I'm pretty comfortable still starting him, just the way they're utilizing running backs right now.
Yeah.
Steeler defense, not as bad against the run as it's being made out to be.
Zach Evans' inability to pass block or block in the passing game.
Yeah.
With a Steelers pretty good defensive front there.
Pretty good. Couple good players named T.J. Watt and Alex Highsmith. Could make a difference. I fully expect this to be a lower scoring game. I really do.
Steelers get Deontay Johnson back, for sure. Maybe Pat Freiermuth. So it might be a full complement of players on that side.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not touching either quarterback in this matchup,
nope.
To be honest with you. I'm not starting Matt Stafford either. I mean, He's maybe the guy you want to start over Pickett, obviously. He's a fringe, like, waiver wire type streamer guy, but I don't see there being a lot of fireworks in this game. I don't know. What do you think?
This is the part of the show where my cat comes down to visit. Literally, it happens every week when we record.
And unplugs my headset multiple times. You got a very strong tail there, kiddo. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
He just likes to come down and investigate for literally, like...
Yeah.
5 minutes and then leaves. That's what's happening right now.
Yeah. But just in summary, I don't love.
Okay, a so lot fantasy of what's going wise in this game, obviously Cooper Kupp, Puka Nacua had his probably worst week. production wise, but I still think he is a player you'd feel comfortable starting. On the Steelers side, George Pickens.
Yeah, I mean, I think the receivers on either side are the only ones you really like starting.
Deontay Johnson will see first week back off of missing, you know, well, 4 weeks plus a bye. So it's been a little bit. We'll see how they utilize him. Najee Harris.
I'm not touching Najee. I'm not touching Pickett. I'm not feeling very good about Freiermuth on that side of the ball. To me, it's just the only interesting thing about this game is to see the division of labor with Johnson and Pickens at receiver. Because you know what Cooper Kupp's going to give you, and I think Puka gives you legitimate wide receiver two upside, even with Kupp on the field. Yep. But I can't touch anyone in the Pittsburgh Steelers backfield at this point.
No.
And tight end's really not that exciting in this game for either team. I mean, they're okay. I mean, because it's such a crapshoot at tight end, you're probably starting one or the other if you have them. But, yeah. I mean, it's to me, it feels no different than Luke Musgrave, who we just talked about.
Correct.
It's the exact same thing. Yeah. And that's why that's a pretty good streamer for me, is because he gives me maybe the same value as what I'm getting out of a Pat Freiermuth or a Tyler Higbee from this matchup.
All right, guys. Well, that's going to do it for this Tuesday's episode. Be sure to check back on Wednesday for our DFS embedding episode. We appreciate you guys listening. We hope you follow us on all of our social media platforms. That would be Instagram at Fantasy Blackboard and X at FF Blackboard. And if you were listening last week, you also realized just at the same time we did that we had an email address. I think that's... Wow, my cat really caused some havoc down here. This is wild. Anyways, guys, you can email us also at ffblackboard@gmail.com. I don't know why I put an ad at the beginning of an email. I don't know.
That's our hand.
Oh, Lord, this cat. Oh, my God. Oh, we'll talk to you guys next week.
Peace.